morning all. Thanks, Ivan. It's a pleasure to be here. I hope you'll not get an overdose of CIMIT today, because I'll present twice, once now and a second one for one of my colleagues, or Schultes, who couldn't attend the meeting. My presentation is maybe a bit broader than the topic of this session, because I will talk about not only information and communication technologies, but also technologies in general. Now we can speed up adoption and access to new technologies to older farmers. The question is obvious, the answer is obvious, of course, yes. But new technologies in the context of smallholder farming systems. There's an IT revolution, and it's already impacting smallholder farmers, but probably not enough. There are direct and indirect benefits. We like to work a lot in our program using a lens of context specificity, and that's valid also for technologies. We work in highly heterogeneous and rapidly changing biophysical and socioeconomic environments. And I see two areas where information communication technologies and technologies in general can benefit. It's agronomic management, financial and market tools, and we are not probably working enough on the second one. One thing that seems obvious is understanding farmer demand. And a few years ago, with one team working in South Asia in one of the projects, and they were just sending unsolicited SMS messages. And with the contrary response from the farmer, they ask, how can we turn off those SMS because we are disturbed by those things? So we have to be very careful also, not pushing down the throat information that's not relevant or of no interest to farmers. We are working a lot on proof of concepts, but proof of concepts is not just good enough. You need to have scaling models for what we develop, and that's something we are still struggling with. What do we want to achieve with farmers? Help farmers to better manage their resources, increase their income profitability, and reduce their production and marketing risks. And I think information knowledge can be very useful for that. So I will just go over two areas of work. The first one would be on nutrient management, and that's clear evidence for the use, good use of decision support systems there. And water management, and that would be more my second presentation, the one I will give in the name of my colleague Urs. And I have a few words also on farm poor and mechanization, because I think it's very important, and we discussed that already yesterday in some of the sessions, Feed the Future session. I think it's understudied. So we have, in CIMIT, we have about 17 offices now throughout the world, and our activities, research for development activities, are mostly focused on Central America, Latin America, East and Southern Africa, and South Asia. That's an impact pathway we put a few years ago for Gates project on how to reach. I mean, you know that many donors don't just want to see research, they want to see impact at scale. And that was for a project in East and Southern Africa. The project was funded. That impact pathway was not really purchased by Gates. That was one of the draft we did. But you can see that in your impact pathway is a lot of relevant component. That was not a project focused specifically on information and communication technologies and decision support, but you can see that the clear area of increased role of decision support systems, data. We are talking more and more now about big data. But we have to also realize that we work, unlike United States or Europe, in data scarce environments. That's not always easy. We like to look at building blocks when we work on decision support systems, information technology for smallholder farmers. You could probably find one or two extra. But those building blocks are also useful to look for us at lateral learning. And now we can use a proof of concept that was developed in one region to another region. And of course, those building blocks are also very important for strategic partnership with advanced research institutions. So remote sensing and other monitoring tools, and that's usually for diagnosis, spatial and temporal dimension. We use it more and more on foresight targeting. We want to use it more on monitoring and evaluation. Geospatial data, there's a revolution going on. I think as remote sensing has been there for 30, 40 years now, but I think many people were disappointed by the low applicability of some of the things. Nutrient water disease management and crop model, and we use crop modeling or systems analysis, and it's hard to turn diagnosis into recommendation. Information and communication technologies and how to get diagnosis from and provide recommendation to farmers. And it's a both way. I think this really still an untapped potential on crowdsourcing. Has been used by marketing companies in developing countries, but not very much by our community in the area where we work. Mechanization is how to apply recommendation in the field and alleviate labor constraints. I think the labor issues is becoming more and more important in smallholder farming systems. You can see that people have access to technologies in rural areas. That's a CCAF, then climate change, CRP survey that was done in 2012. And that was done only in rural area. Urban areas, of course, penetration rates are even higher. That's 4 years old now, and it's probably much higher now. You can see that some countries still lag behind, like Ethiopia. But you have usually a penetration rate over 60-70% in most farming systems where we work. That's not always smart phones. Sometimes that's the basic cheap phone that you can limit it use, but at least you can receive SMS with it. That's a prototype that was developed by Masagua, one project we have in Mexico with Mexican partners. And that was designed a few years ago, and you can see that it's very much one-way flow of information. I think we need to revise those type of things to have more crowdsourcing. But we can also identify different type of clients. I think when you develop applications to scale, you need to have the business model and the use case in mind from the beginning. It has evolved, and I think now we are just using a lot of crowdsourcing in that project, and it's not only getting data, information, knowledge to farmers, but also getting information, spatially explicit information from farmers. We are starting to improve our data management as well. I think most research institutions are usually struggle with data management because it's usually underfunded and not enough expertise in that, but we are starting using electronic field logbook. We use GeoDK for survey. We combine now secondary data sources also is something very challenging. It's hard to get information from other systems, information systems. And we have monitoring data tools where you can look at real-time visualization of data, of survey going on yield estimates and things like that. Decision support systems in Africa, and I think we are not semi, we are a bit treading behind. I think there's quite a few things that are already done in Africa. I think one good example is the Acre Africa that's led by the Syngenta Foundation. And of course, SMS is not a standalone strategy, and I think SMS is usually very limited in terms of the information content you can get. But we can expect that with cheaper smartphones, soon farmers will be able, at least literate farmers, because literacy is also a problem in the area where we work. Literate farmer can get much richer information. We We don't need to reinvent the wheel, and I think that's again how you, as an institution, you link with leading partners in that area. Public-private extension. I think many areas in the world, the private sector, if you look at Monsanto, if you look at Bayer, BASF, they are developing their own systems. And I think we should also try to learn from the experience, probably ally with some of those partners, but certainly not replicate. One issue is many systems, private companies don't see a clear return on investment on that type of tools yet. So, then information needs to be actionable. I mean, it's just saying it rained 15 millimeters yesterday. I don't think it's very useful. I worked in West Africa and Niger, and I mean, farmers knew how much it rained because they would just look at the wet front in the profile and say it's time to plant or not. And the expression of rainfall in millimeters is not just good enough. So I think also this access to inputs is very important, and linking technical recommendations with access and price of inputs is something that we need to work on. Some of the systems we have been developing in collaboration with IPNI, but also with IRI in South Asia, is nutrient decision support systems, just to improve timing of application, quantity formulation. And those systems can work with or without soil tests. I mean, you realize that in many places in Africa, farmers don't have the access to soil labs, and they're usually not willing to pay for soil analysis of their farm. So we have developed that, and I think the system exists now for maize, but also for wheat and for rice from the IRI side. An application that's related to soil fertility management is a smartphone app that you can pair with Green Seeker measurement. That means you measure on the ground the normalized difference vegetation index, which is a proxy of biomass times greenness of the vegetation. So it's quite easy. You have different languages. That's very important also. Don't develop your apps in English. It's quite obvious. But you can just enter information as a farmer, as an extension service, because that can be used by extension services as well. And mostly in South Asia, it's extension services because the Green Seeker cost is still very high for a farmer, of course, alone. So some of the results on participatory validation in Green Seeker in rice and wheat, and you can see some of the net return figure in the table below. So there are states where, I mean, the GS is Green Seeker, and the FP is Farmer Practices, and that's the net return per hectare. In dollar. And then you can see that there are states, and that's an average, then we should look at the distribution of that and try to understand, you know, the distribution and why it works with some farmers and not, to have some lessons learned. But you can see that in BI it works quite well, it's quite impressive, but if you look at the state of Haryana in India or Punjab, it's not that that convincing yet. Sensor technology for nutrient management, different costs and scale, and that's a slide that was shared by Ivan. Ivan is working a lot on nitrogen management in Mexico. And you can see at the bottom that we downscale technologies to the simplest possible and the cheapest possible mean. But we were trying to upscale also some of that work. I mean, it takes a lot of time to go through a field with a Green Seeker, especially if you have high heterogeneity. And we are looking also at ways to upscale that information through drone, airplane, and satellite application. That would allow to cover a much larger area without too much efforts. One nice application has been developed for 2, 3, 4 years now, Ivan? I mean, 3 years, huh? It's GreenSat that's serving several production systems in Mexico. This is in the Yaqui Valley. But we got access from the Mexican government for free to spot 6-7 satellite imagery and at high temporal resolution, revisiting period. And what you can see in that map, it's one field where the farmers put nitrogen-enriched strip as a comparative level, and then the system would just, you delineate your field, you delineate your nitrogen-enriched strip, and on the web, you can get recommendation on fertilizer application. Still very much a prototype. I think we have also to look at new sources of data for that. We just signed an agreement with the European Space Agency to get access to Sentinel-2 data. Sentinel-2 data are free, but we are champion users, then we are getting a bit of support on the data processing chain. Sentinel-2 is quite exciting. It's not very high resolution. It's 10 meters pixel, but in Mexico it works very well. In Bangladesh it's not that great. And we have a 5-day revisiting period also for that. And we are just starting working with the data now, but I think one of the interesting application would be for nutrient management. Because again, I mean, we were depending on Mexico for spots 5, 6, and 7 images, but if you work in another area, in Africa or in India, it's much more difficult to get access to satellite imagery for free. We also, I mean, it's the field of remote sensing and private sector investment by small companies like Planet Labs is quite interesting, and we're in discussion with Planet Labs and others, and we have right now, in fact, we'll have access to daily coverage starting in 2017 of 3-meter data with 4 bands. We have to realize also that those satellites are almost like shoebox things, they're very cheap. But in terms of radiometric correction, radiometric integrity is not that good. It's not as good as Sentinel-2, for example, or Landsat data. So I think it's also the future challenges, which will be combination of different sources of geospatial data in a sound and solid framework. Now a bit on farm power and the need for mechanization. That's what most people do in farming systems, manually. Well, usually they don't place the fertilizer. They just broadcast it, and that's quite the most inefficient way because it's labor demanding. They usually do it in one application. There's no split application of nitrogen fertilizer. Weeding is a major issue also in many farming systems and can affect your yields to up to 50-60% in places where labor is scarce. Row planting, you can do it by hand, of course. And you can see also irrigation, post-harvest and transport are major issues. I don't know if you noticed, but most of the people in those pictures are women. And I think the drudgery on farming for the heavy labor is usually put on women and sometimes children. And I think mechanization has also a very positive gender component in alleviating drudgery in farming systems. It's not only, I mentioned also for irrigation, that's, for example, innovation we've been working a lot with in Bangladesh, and I'll talk a bit more on the irrigation component during the second presentation, but those are actual flow pumps. Of course, you cannot have a large lift because you suck them. That's 4-5 meters maximum. That's usually 2-3 meters. But it gives you access in Bangladesh to surface water to irrigate your field and gives you much more flexibility in terms of managing irrigation. And it's potentially labor creating. I mean, you start seeing in Bangladesh, and that's the model we want also to put in Africa, having service providers, you know, being farmers, becoming service providers, investing in equipment and machinery, and getting a quite quick return by providing services to other farmers in the landscape. some myth about two-wheel tractors and draft animal power. I think the right size, and it was been used all over the place in Bangladesh, in some other countries like Thailand, but two-wheel tractors are quite attractive because they are not that expensive. I mean, $2,800 is still a very, very large amount for most smallholder farming systems, and I think we start to need to pair that with proper financial services for people interested in developing business through two-wheel tractors. But if you look at efficiencies, if you use a pair of oxen to prepare your land, it's 2.33% per day per hectare. That's quite tremendous. If you go to a two-wheel tractor, it's 0.25, and it's a bit faster, of course, with the four-wheel tractor. But if you look at fuel efficiencies, it's quite good for the two-wheel tractors. And if you look at an energy balance or an energy approach to that, you have to realize that to maintain your pair of oxen in the landscape, you have to feed them with a lot of biomass. So it's quite interesting. Of course, we pair that with reduced tillage conservation agriculture practices. Then we need also to have the right implements for those tractors, which reduce also the demand for energy, because in farming, primary tillage is the most demanding operation for fossil fuel. So the conclusion, making technologies accessible, I think we need to work with the private sector, and we need to have clear business models from the beginning. I have mentioned several times, I really believe in improved financial services for farmers, smallholder farmers, and I think there are places where you have some good success stories, some places where it's not that easy. And it's not only credit, it's also savings. I think farmers usually save in the form of livestock, which is very labor-demanding and very risky, in fact, compared to a good saving account. We need to go beyond proof of concept because we have a lot of things to learn when we scale technologies, and I think we shouldn't just publish something and a proof of concept, but we should accompany development and private sector in improving those applications. As I said at the beginning of my talk, it needs to be demand-driven, understanding the demand and other stakeholders. I mean, it's not always direct, you know. You can work a lot on decision support systems to the benefit of the farmers through extension services, private sector, and so on. But we need to understand properly the demand. Risk mitigation is really, really something that's important. Several studies show that, in fact, lack of adoption of improved management practices are usually linked to perception of increased risk by farmers. And then when you look at risk mitigation, we can also link it with financial services and insurance services also for smallholder farmers, in which geospatial information should play a key role. I think on the technologies, we are the infancy in terms of remote sensing, geospatial tools, information and communication technologies. Maybe not here where we have all that fantastic smartphone, but in many, many landscapes, I think we'll see the transformation of smart technology, smartphone technologies in farming. It's an exciting work with large potential impact at scale. I think it's participatory research is nice. Innovation platforms, apps is nice as well, but those are not true scaling instruments. They are more learning instruments. Then we need to learn, at least for our research for development, on how to scale better our technologies. And I think crowdsourcing is also very much untapped and very high potential. Thank you very much.
We open the floor for questions. Yes.
Yeah, under mitigation, you mentioned insurance. Are you talking something more about crop insurance for developing countries?
Yeah, you can have crop index insurance. You can have insurance linked to purchase of inputs, for example, as many, many schemes. And it's not easy. I mean, the crop insurance is not something easy. And I think you have quite a few skeptical people on crop insurance, even people who have worked 20 or 30 years of the career on the, from the World Bank, for example, on that. And, but I think if we want to see improvement in systems, we really need to look at risk mitigation, not only on the technological side, but also on the institutional financial side as well. So. It's an excellent question, and of course, a lot of strengths attached when you come into mechanization, because you cannot afford people buying expensive equipment, expensive attachment, and not having the capability to fix those things in case of problems in a timely manner, because you might jeopardize the season. I think it's in some systems, I mean, the answer is, well, I would say like a good agronomist, it depends. I think that some systems where space still space for animal traction, and you can still improve a lot on in that respect. And again, we are working under the lens of conservation agriculture. We don't exclude one or the other. We are just trying at developing even hand tools. It can be hand tools, can be animal traction, can be two-wheel tractors. And in South Asia, we work with four-wheel tractors implements like the APC here. And I think we are not very dogmatic on that. But looking at the inefficiencies of animal traction, if you have environments where you can make the jump either from animal traction to two-wheel or from hand labor to two-wheel tractors, I think there's large potential for that. But again, you need to be very cautious with those technologies, because you don't want to have farmers depending and being vulnerable because of lack of maintenance, lack of quality of equipment, and all those type of things.
Okay.
It's very much, I mean, our work on mechanization came from working on conservation agriculture before working on, I would say, even before working on mechanization, having, the need to have adapted planters, if you work through crop residues and no-till. So it's very much linked. And when we promote, of course, two-wheel tractors, try to do a deep plowing with a two-wheel tractors in rocky soils in Ethiopia. It will never work, of course. So the thing is that when we promote two-wheel tractors, we promote at the same time reduced tillage and conservation agriculture. And again, I mean, talking about conservation agriculture, one of the principles of conservation agriculture is permanent soil cover. And in many crop livestock systems, whether in South Asia or in Africa, livestock is eating all your soil cover. Then I have some of my colleagues saying, no tillage, no residue is the road to hell. It's just terrible, because you increase your runoff, you increase your erosion, and it's worse than traditional plowing. So we look at that. Then if you replace, your oxen by two-wheel tractors, you have already increased the chance of having more residues to leave on your field. And all our work should be very, very much linked to livestock productivity in systems as well. I think it's a key in farming systems where we work. We cannot just look at, crops. We need to look at livestock production, because those farms are just mixed farms.
Okay, there was one question here and then back there.
So I just wonder, you have seen me having experience with research center trying to do partnership with private sectors. So how do you how do you see in the future that type of partnership should be?
Yeah, that is a good question, and I think, I mean, it's not one model. I mean, we like to brand ourselves as honest brokers, and the role of our role in public-private partnership is multiple, because if you work in Bangladesh, we work with very, very small businesses, you know, linked to two-wheel tractor implements and things like that. We are linking also now more and more with China on, you know, two-wheel tractor supply. It's a wide range of things. We work with companies like BSF in Mexico. It's a bit opportunistic as well. What is challenging for us is that private partnership or the private sector is not always interested because they have other priorities. I mean, targeting, geographic targeting is not based on return on investment, at least not on a commercial manner, I think, and on livelihood issues, yes. But the private sector is looking for profits. Then we have many places where and talk about Africa, now we start seeing investments of the fertilizer industry. We have one project trying to improve formulation recommendation in Africa on fertilizer. But it's just it's embryonic right now in Africa.
Thank you very much, Bruno. You did a wonderful job.
In terms of filling the time,
yeah, we very much appreciate it.
Thank you.